Hey everyone, welcome to the U Project, number 166. My name's Craig Harper, and this voice you're about to hear is Melissa Cameron, put your teeth in Harp's eye.
Hello.
You all right?
I'm great, thank you.
What's going on with you?
Oh, it's been a good day.
Has it been a good day, though?
Yeah, it has been. It's been a good week.
It's been a challenging day for me. I don't often say that. It's been a lumpy day, but that's all right. It's part of the tapestry, part of the fabric that is life, Melissa. I just, you know, soldiering on. First world problems. I've had a few little challenges today, including a man in a ute who wanted to punch me in the face on North Road, or he appeared to. There was a lot of waving and gesticulating.
Maybe he was just really happy to see
you. Well, then the man in the ute pulled up next to me, and you know when you can feel someone staring through your soul, and I thought, if I turn around and look at him,
it's going to be
on. And, you know, me being the Dalai Lama at all times, pretty much, I just refrained as I do.
Were you wearing your caftan at
and,
the time?
I wasn't wearing my caftan and I didn't have my dream catcher hanging off the fucking rear view mirror. But I was driving my little white, not particularly manly alpha male Suzuki.
That's okay.
And I think he might have assumed something. But anyway, God bless him.
Well, maybe he shouldn't have assumed.
And we went on our separate ways and there was not even a nasty glare shared. Probably there was one coming my way, but I didn't see.
How funny would that have been if you actually were wearing a caftan or something?
That'd be I'd just say, sorry, I'm away to yoga. Didn't see you. Fucking want to cuddle. Today's guest on the U Project is Russell Jarrett. He's a friend of mine. I am the godfather to his son Mitchell, which would make Russ my god brother. I've never thought about that, but that must be, and because we're both pretty spiritual. Hello, God brother.
Hello, Craig. How are you?
I'm not sure about the validity of you being my God brother, but especially seeing as neither of us are particularly religious.
No, I don't. I don't think I've ever been called a God brother before, but you know, we'll go with it.
Yeah, my God brother. So Rusty owns a gym up in Kyabram called Infinity. Arguably so my three favorite gyms in Australia are in no particular order, but the best country gym in Australia as awarded and voted by me is Infinity in Kyabram. Like far and away the best facilities, resources, staff, team. I'm not just saying that, like, because I would just not mention it. But if you're ever anywhere near that area, get the fuck up there. It's like, Rusty, I reckon your gym for me, it's like, you know when someone needs to hang a boxing bag and they put up a bracket on the wall that you could literally hang a house off, right? It's somewhat over-engineered. Well, your facility, the fucking Australian Olympic team could train there, and it's for the general public in Kyabram, God bless them, but they're not that many Olympians among them. But nonetheless, folks, if you want to go and train somewhere that is a very high standard in rural Victoria, that would be your place. Yeah, my second favourite place is the Boathouse down on the peninsula. It's my favourite Victorian peninsula gym. And then, oh God, what are they called in Tassie? Is it New Horizons or something?
Healthy Horizons, healthy, I think.
Fucking, can you look it up?
I'm going to look that up. You keep going. I'm pretty sure it's Healthy Horizons, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, well, I don't go there that often, but I do love it. Anyway, mate, how have you been?
Yeah, very well, and thank you for describing my gym as a little bit of overkill, because you're probably right. I've overcompensated. It's like it's a bit like a guy who drives a fast car. And what do they say about those kinds?
Well,
of
they do. They do. I've seen your anatomy, and you have indeed. No, I haven't. But it is an amazing gym, and it is probably somewhat excessive. But fuck it, we'll take advantage of it. Now, of course, Russ worked with me at St Kilda Footy Club, strength and conditioning coach, also at Melbourne Footy Club, also worked with some Australian Institute of Sport athletes, also was the head strength and conditioning coach of the Australian women's cricket team for, I don't know, how long? Six years.
Yep.
So quite a while, as well as an educator and as well as does a bit of corporate stuff here and there, consulting and speaking and all that. So we don't normally plug at the top, but if people want to contact you before we get underway, how do they do that?
Very simple. They can just email me, russell@russelljarrett.com.au.
Okay, perfect. And Melissa's giving you a thumbs up.
It is Healthy Horizons.
Healthy Horizons in Tassie. Go and see the team down there. They're amazing. All right. So what I thought we would do is I was talking to Melissa. By the way, I don't know if you've been paying attention, but the podcast's gone fucking bananas. Rusty, have you noticed?
I do keep a very close eye on it, and I listen into your episodes, mate. Don't worry. I'm an avid follower.
Well, thank you for the support, but we're going okay over here. No thanks to me. Thanks to our amazing listeners and our support crew and all the people that, you know, it's what I love is when I see online people going, hey, you should go and listen to this. They don't even link me. They're just talking about it. So I know when we're doing something good, when people are talking about it. And we're very fortunate that we happen to find good people to have good conversations. But I was talking to Melissa the other day when I was driving to university. And we were talking about the micro and the macro of the podcast, and we were talking about in the podcast, what's good to listen to, and, you know, actually having people on who can string a few words together and share their thoughts and ideas without being terrified of, you know, being in the spotlight, so to speak, or in front of a microphone. But we're also talking about the big picture macro of, you know, what we're offering up to people in terms of, you know, we can't have, you know, someone talking, coming on like five episodes in a row talking about their tragic childhood that got turned into this amazing adulthood, although those are great stories, but you can't wheel out too much of the same. And I said to myself, self and Melissa, I said, you know what we need? We need to do something where we're not talking about, you know, the deep and philosophical and emotional and sociological. We're just talking about how to fucking get in shape and what are all the twists and turns and variables around that. And then I thought to myself, who do I know that's good and free? And you sprung to mind.
Well, I'm free. Let's hope I'm good, but I'm certainly free.
So the challenge for us is what I want to do is I just want to go through, I want to give a quick few thoughts on a bunch of different stuff. I've sent you the list. You feel free to add. And if we do all the list, half the list, none of the list or other shit, I don't care. But there's a lot of confusion around a lot of ideas and a lot of terminology, and there's a lot of marketing and emotion that is misrepresentative, let's say that. A lot of bullshit, we might say. And so what I want to do is – and by the way, folks, so when Russ and I are talking today, I'm talking as objectively as a person can talk about the value or the application of these particular things. So I'm not trying to coerce anyone to do any particular thing or take up any particular methodology. I'm not trying to sway anyone. And I think that's the important thing, is to be able to talk logically, rationally, and as, I guess, objectively as we can about these different ideas around training a body, what works and what doesn't. Because invariably when we hear somebody talking about exercise model Y, generally they've got a vested interest, or they've got an emotion wrapped around it, which is either they fucking love it or they hate it. Whereas I think you and I are pretty objective. Like, I come from a sports prescription background or an exercise programming background, as do you. So correct me if I'm wrong, but our collective thinking is, well, what does that body need? What does that person need? What are the physiological requirements of that sport or that goal or that outcome that we want to create? And then let's program accordingly. So what I like or don't like doesn't really come into it.
No. And my, I guess in my evolution of working as an exercise scientist or as an expert around training and getting people fitter, stronger, leaner, whatever, I find myself now, having done it for a long period of time, continuously trying to simplify and demystify and remove a lot of the noise around the information that people get, because I find that these days, now more so than ever, there's so much information, so much noise, so much conflicting opinion. And as a result, the consumer, the fitness enthusiast, is more confused than ever.
100%.
And so I'm trying to. I find myself having conversations daily, numerous conversations daily, trying to help people make sense of all the noise and all the information and all the conflicting opinion.
And also 100% agree. And also trying to work through the sales pitches and the agendas. Oh. And mate. The come on, son. You know, when when somebody's really trying to push something on me, I'm almost guaranteed that they have an agenda or that there's some kind of benefit in me taking it up or supporting it or embracing it. So that's what we're – all right, so first cab off the rank, there's lots and lots of conversation around functional training.
Yep.
Tell me what functional training is in a minute or two and I'll jump in.
Right.
Or not.
So functional training is a term, as far as I can tell, that probably sprung up 10 to 15 years ago, maybe a fraction longer, but it came into being as a result of people trying to understand how to best utilize strength training and perhaps more traditional bodybuilding training for the benefit of people who weren't bodybuilders. So why or how should we go to the gym and lift weights if we play tennis or soccer or football, or we are a swimmer or a runner? Why should we bother? How should we do it? Why is it good for us? And so people started to say, well, let's try and make the strength training that you do as functional as possible for you. Now, the problem is that over the years, that term functional, in my opinion, has become well and truly overused and certainly probably abused somewhat so that people can justify all sorts of crazy, often irrelevant forms of training. So functional training is trying to make strength training useful for what you need it for.
And I guess I'll add on to that is to ultimately improve the skill or the sport or the performance, you know, via that, you know, why am I lifting? You're right. If we're looking at, say, something like tennis, we would say that lying on a bench press is probably not hugely valuable, right? It's probably not a game changer for a tennis player to be able to bench press 300 pounds. That's not to say they should never bench press. But I guess the thing is, you know, we see a lot of people doing like wood chopping kind of things, for example, with cables where they're working their obliques and they're working all the kind of twisting muscles, for want of a more sciencey term, where we go, okay, so perhaps with tennis or perhaps with golf or perhaps with baseball or softball, there's some level of transference here where we go, okay, so what we're doing is we're building rotational strength while that person's, you know, and so it's like, what is the goal? What's the thing that you want to do, be, create, or change with this body? And will this movement help you do that better or perform better? So, yeah, exactly. I agree with you. It's like it's a blanket term for a shitload of different things.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I think the problem is that people are starting to use the word functional to justify, like I said, all sorts of weird and wonderful movements that they can't really explain to the client or to the athlete. So I prefer to use a different term, and I talk about relevant training rather than functional.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. Keep going.
So you know, when I work with a golfer or a tennis player or a Aussie rules footballer or something like that, you know, those sports are pretty varied and demanding in terms of what you need to be able to do as an athlete. So, you know, sometimes you need to actually simplify and strip it back. We don't need to go into the gym and do 50 different movements that in some way, shape or form replicate what the golfer, the tennis player or the footballer does. Sometimes we are being our most functional by just choosing 5, 6, maybe up to 10 of the best movements that you can do to assist with the on-court or the on-field requirements they have.
And I think to broaden that out too, in terms of stepping out of just functional training now and stepping in more broadly to exercise prescription, you know, be that strength, cardio, stretching, agility, speed, power, whatever the component of fitness is that we're trying to develop, is not only educating ourselves on what works for our body and paying attention to the biofeedback, paying attention to what my body is telling me and how I respond to the various stimuli, but also to be able to find a person who is not biased, which is very difficult, but you know what I mean, as objective in the space of exercise programming and conditioning as possible, to write an individual prescription for our body based on where we are, where we want to be, our current state of condition, our goals, our physiological requirements for our sport or our activities of daily living, and then to go, right, now I've assessed you and I've had a chat with you and I know what your goals are, I know where you're at right now, so based on that, now I'm going to prescribe you a program. And that's analogous to going and sitting with a doctor for 30 or 60 minutes and going through your history and how you're feeling and blah, and then having him or her prescribe you something off the back of that.
Well, mate, you're right. Here's the thing. If you sit down in front of a doctor and the doctor looks at you, he or she looks at you and says, Craig, today I'm going to give you some blood pressure medication. I'm going to give you some antihistamines and I'm going to give you some vitamins to take as well. Now, and that's before you even tell them what's wrong with you. No one would do that. That's crazy. That's madness. That's stupidity. So why is it that people don't communicate, or trainers and coaches don't necessarily communicate with their client or their athlete and say, well, what is it that you want? What are your goals? What have you done in the past? What are you good at? What injuries or medical background do you? No one asks, well, not no one, but very few people ask those questions anymore before they actually write a program.
And if you sat someone down and said, okay, so you're going to train for the next 12 months, and they'd go, yep, cool, okay. So what if we could find a program that for the most part is, you know, somewhere in the vicinity of a 9 or a 10 out of 10 for you, everybody would want that program. But what we do is, because Brian at the gym said, no, don't fucking squat or don't do this, or and Brian did Cert 4 in fitness, which is a good thing, by the way. I'm not shit-canning that. But what we do is we follow advice from people who either maybe don't know. Some people do, of course. There are brilliant trainers and Cert 4 people and exercise physiologists, so this is not a blanket thing.
Sure.
But there are more people that probably need to give out less advice. Right? And we also need to be, and this is true in any field, not just exercise fitness, exercise programming, but we need to be really discerning about who we pay attention to. I know when I was 18 years old, with about 7 minutes of study under my belt, I was on the gym floor in 1982 writing programs. Now, if I'm being 100% honest, fucking hell, I probably shouldn't have been. And I'm glad I wasn't one of the members coming in getting a program for me, because it was kind of educated guessing. And I know everybody's got to start somewhere. I get that. And we're all works in progress. I get that too. But, you know, we need to be careful, one, as, you know, people who are qualified in the space, what we say and where the line is for us, but also as consumers of fitness and exercise, the community needs to be very aware of who they trust, who they pay attention to, and who they follow the advice of.
More so than ever, because you know, when I worked with you at Harper's PT or at St Kilda Football Club, you kind of heard of people who were really good at their trade. You heard of them through word of mouth, and you heard of them by referral of other people who had worked with them and got really good results. And that's how, I mean, that's how I first started to hear about you, because there was this guy in Hampton that was running a great PT center and training people all day and getting great results and getting people in shape that couldn't get in shape before. And so I'm like, who's this Craig Harper guy? Now, that's how we found out about good people back in the day. So, but now before you even understand what people do, they're all over you on social media or on the internet, or they have a website. And consumers now more so than ever have to be, as you say, really, really careful, really discerning, and very vigilant about who's telling you what and what their motives may or may not be.
And I think, do I say this? I just think we need to be discerning, because going and training with somebody who themselves has a great body – That's not necessarily a thing you shouldn't do, but just because that person has a great body doesn't mean that they are a great coach or trainer or they have great knowledge.
And I use the analogy, you know, I like to drive a nice car, but I'm by no way, shape or form a mechanic.
Yeah.
Don't ask me to fix your car. I'll drive it, but don't ask me to fix it.
Yeah. And by the way, of course, there are some trainers that are jacked and young and gorgeous and amazing trainers too. But sometimes we look at somebody who got qualified 7 minutes ago and they've got an amazing body. So therefore we go, I want them to train me. Whereas they largely look like that because they've got spectacular genetics. Or they train really well or whatever, but there's a difference between I can train myself well and I look great and I am a great teacher, coach, mentor. Because when you are looking, and we'll finish on this, but when you're looking for a coach or a trainer, you are looking for someone who understands human behavior, understands bodies, understands anatomy, physiology, biomechanics, progressive overload, adaptation, nutrition. Obviously, we're not dietitians, but we need to at least have an understanding of all of these variables, right? And so you are looking for somebody, yes, if they look good, that's great. But you're also looking
for... That's a bonus.
And if you're also looking for somebody who is actually a great mentor and teacher and educator and has got results on the board. All right, next one I want to talk to you about is people get really confused about the work-rest ratio. I want you to talk about work, how much rest in the gym. And I know there's no set answer for that. Like, should it be like a minute of strength and a minute of rest and on and off like that? Or and then talk to me about training and rest more macro in terms of over a week.
Okay, so if let's talk specifically strength training for a moment. If we're in the gym and we're strength training, whether that be to get stronger or to build muscle, as in train for hypertrophy, which is a slightly different form of strength training, but nonetheless still strength training.
Yeah,
there are certain guidelines in place for rest periods in between sets. Mm. Now, without because this is a lecture within itself, but the general guideline is this: if the weight that you're trying to move or lift is very heavy, and you can move it somewhere between, with good technique, good form, somewhere between 1 and 5 times, as in 1 and 5 reps, then you need to have fairly extensive rest in between each set, because that is real maximal strength training.
Mm.
As the repetitions go up, the rest period tends to get a little longer. So if you're in the gym and you're trying to build muscle, so you're in a sort of a more of a hypertrophy orientated rep scheme, then your rest periods are going to be somewhere around a minute to 90 seconds, maybe 2 minutes at tops, because you're trying to. What you're trying to do is partially fatigue the muscle, allow for partial rest, and then hit it again before it's fully recovered.
Are you saying?
Yeah, go on.
Are you saying, like the first one you said 1 to 5, so strength and power. So is the rest longer then or shorter than for hypertrophy?
The rest is longer.
Yeah, because you said the other way around when you went. Yep. So the rest for the kind of higher reps comes, the time comes down a little bit.
Yep. Yep. Sorry. I might have confused myself.
That's all right. Keep
there.
Going. Yeah.
But yeah. So low reps, looking for strength and power. You're fatiguing the muscle, but you're certainly fatiguing the nervous system more. Therefore, you need a longer rest.
Cool.
All right. If we're pushing for hypertrophy, so generally speaking, those repetitions are going to be somewhere around the 6, 8 to 12 range.
Mm.
You need less rest because you want to allow only partial recovery.
Mm.
Now, once you get above those rep ranges, so you're up around, say, 15 or 20, well, now it's switched over into more of a muscular endurance outcome.
Mm.
You're not really exerting massive levels of force, because if you were, there's no way you could pick it up 15 times.
Yep.
So now we're starting to work on strength endurance or muscular endurance, local muscular endurance. And our rest times need to come back down again.
Mm.
So it's a really interesting science. But what I'll do is I'll also underline those statements with a comment like this, and that is that everyone responds differently. The problem is everyone responds differently. So some people get great hypertrophy outcomes by doing reps of 6 to 8.
Mm.
Other people get really good hypertrophy outcomes by doing 12 to 15, because whilst all of these numbers have been developed over time and they seem to have a good formula and a good scientific background to them, everybody's physiology is different.
Mm. Mm.
So, you know, you and I have a very different physiques. I'm a lot more slow twitch. You're a lot more fast twitch. You put on muscle very easily. Mm. And I don't. I'm what they call a hard gainer. So, you know, for me to put on muscle, I've got to actually lift somewhere around 4 to 8, and eat a lot of food, because I just don't add muscle easily.
I just sneeze and my triceps grow a little bit. sorry about that, mate. Sorry.
That's correct.
Just
no,
all right now. Okay, so. And again, this is a little bit of science here, everyone. And by the way, we're not recommending anything. We're having a conversation. So this is a little bit of legit science and a little bit of bro science. But let's talk about, okay, how often we should lift weights. So the general person who just wants to be a bit stronger, a bit fitter, a bit leaner, all that kind of, you know, that generic general kind of, we're not talking about I'm training for the Olympics or I want to bench press 600 pounds, bit stronger, bit fitter, bit leaner. How often should we lift weights? What do you tell Joe Public who walks into your gym?
I say this. I say if you really want some results, you've got to be in the gym at least twice a week, preferably three.
Mm.
At least twice a week, preferably three. Mm. If you can get in four, that's great. That's great, but I don't need to see you 5 or 6 or 7. You just don't need to do that.
Mm.
So my advice will always be somewhere between 2 to 4 times a week. Two is enough. 3 is better. 4 is at the top end. I don't need to see you 5, 6, 7.
And we're talking about strength training only there?
Well, we're talking – yes.
Or are you talking about everything?
Well, again, if you've got a goal of putting on significant amounts of muscle and you really want some hypertrophy and you want to get up on stage and compete in a show – well, 2 sessions a week ain't going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it might look more like 6 or 7. You might even be on certain days, you might even be doing 2 workouts in a day.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it comes back to average Joe, normal results, not much of a training background or a history. What's going to get me in shape?
Mm.
A well-written program at the right intensity in conjunction with the right diet, 3 times a week will get the job done.
Mm. All right, talk to me about, I'm jumping around if you're looking at that list, I'm jumping all the way down to, not that you're over 50 and not that I'm over 50, but you and I both know people over 50, and I've heard that some of my listeners know people over 50 also.
Yeah.
Let's talk about... Okay, so let's talk about the possibilities and potential for people who are, and when I say over 50, I'm really talking anyone in that middle-aged space onwards.
Yep.
Tell those blokes outside to shut up, will you, mate? It's all good. What's our potential as we age in terms of winding back the clock from a performance point of view, from a body composition point of view, from a general wellness, health, function point of view, what's the potential for us to wind back the clock as we age?
Yeah, well, the potential is very high. I mean, I don't think that once you get above a certain age that all is lost and it's a slow declining pathway to sort of losing muscle and losing strength. Obviously, our body changes, but certainly as you age, there is still plenty of potential to reinvent yourself physically. I mean, 2 guys that I did a little bit of work with last year came to me in what you would probably describe as fairly average to poor levels of fitness and strength.
Mm.
And I wrote them a basic program. One's in his late 50s, one's in his mid 40s.
Yeah.
And they were both, you know, kind of good sports people in their 20s and 30s, but then they'd let themselves go a bit.
Mm.
And I just put them on a fairly basic program, but they had to do something every day. Some days were harder than others, but most days of the week they were doing something.
Mm.
We certainly tightened up their nutrition. And now, probably 6 to 8 months later, they're what you would describe as quite fit, quite strong, healthy looking, middle-aged male. So the potential is great. But what I'll say about it is you don't have a lot of room for error. So you can't kind of fluff around, you can't kind of sort of exercise, sort of not, and you can't sort of eat well, sort of not eat well. You have to jump in boots and all, because my 19-year-old son can eat McDonald's twice a week, hit the gym twice a week, kind of eat okay, kind of train reasonably well, and he's lean and he's strong, but he's, you know, he's a 19-year-old male loaded with natural testosterone. Now, I can't do that. I can't eat what he eats. I can't kind of train sometimes when I feel like it. For me to stay fit and healthy and strong and lean, I kind of have to be really engaged with my training and my nutrition all the time.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
100%. So
the potential is there. You've just got to be a little bit, I think, got to be a bit more diligent, and you've got to really, really dial in as to what you need to do for your age, for your goals, and for your body's ability.
And I think also, you know, part of that too is going, all right, so like for me, I'm 56, right? I go, well, I can't do what I did when I was 46. Oh, I kind of can actually. But, you know, my potential at my age is not the same as when I was in my 20s. So I think a big part of the adjustment is actually mentally and emotionally getting to the point where we go, I need to create a new operating system. And I need to figure out, because when you can kind of get away with stuff until you're about, I reckon, 40, 45. By the time you're 50, shit's falling off unless you're a genetic freak. But I personally think, based on my body and experience and my working with a gazillion people, I think what you do between, I'm going to say 45 and 50, 45, 55, whatever, it's crucial. Like, and that doesn't mean if you're a train wreck when you're 55 that you can't lose weight and get in and all that. Doesn't mean that. But it just means that, okay, I need to approach the next, if I'm going to live for another 30 years, let's hope, or whatever, I need to figure out how I'm going to do these 30 years. Because if I'm kind of eating shit and kind of working out, then kind of not. Now, I think one of the things that people balk at sometimes when you essentially say you're either got to be full on or not on, which you didn't say that, but if people think, oh, fuck, I don't want to be obsessed, I want to have a life, and we automatically tell ourselves stories about, well, I'm going to miss out. You know, I'm going to go and socialize. Everyone's going to be doing A and I'm going to be doing B and I'm going to, but, and I say to people, how on earth, if you're in a fitter, leaner, lighter, stronger, healthier, more functional body, how are you missing out?
You know? Yeah, that's right.
Which is not say either you can never have a beer or never have a bit of cake or never have a pizza. But I think along with saying, all right, I'm whatever age I am, I need to change the way that I exercise, that I eat. I need to change my lifestyle. I need to not overthink it. I need to not throw myself a pity party. And I need to change my thinking and my emotion around this so that this is not just a new thing that I'm doing for summer or for an event, but rather this is my new normal. And I think once we get a really nice operating system, then if we want, we can always weave in a bit of letting our hair down or a bit of, you know, socializing in the way that we used to every now and then. But that's not the normal, that's the treat. And I think there's, you know, we kind of take sometimes that old thinking into a new situation and it just doesn't work.
Oh, mate, 100%, you're exactly right. But you and I both know that it's that kind of change in thinking and, I guess, attitude towards exercise and nutrition as being beneficial rather than as something to be endured. It doesn't have to be endured. You're not, you know, if you eat well, if you exercise well, there are so many other things that you will benefit from rather than feel like you're missing out. And and the other way I describe it to people is, you know, you've used this same kind of approach before. You get one body, you get one chance. So we can't We can't abuse it. It's like you can't drive your car at breakneck speed and treat it poorly and never service it and smash the brakes and drive it hard and over-accelerate and then speed all the time and expect that car to stay in good condition and good working order for you. One day, at some point, it will give up on you. It will break down. Something will be damaged.
And the beauty of a car is you can get another one, but you can't get another fucking body. But we treat our cars better than we treat our bodies sometimes. All right, let's move on. So there's a lot of, for a long time, a fair bit of attention and focus on and interest around and even hype around kettlebell training.
Right.
What do we think about that? What's the attraction?
Yeah, look, it's kettlebells are like, it's an apparatus, which I personally like.
Yeah.
But as we both know, it's an apparatus. It's not God's gift to training. It's not the be all and end all. It's not a panacea for every goal you want. Now, yes, there's going to be kettlebell enthusiasts who love it, who swear by it, and that's all they do. I watched a Joe Rogan episode the other day where he interviewed Pavel Satsuline.
The guru.
Who's a Russian strength coach, and he's one of the godfathers of kettlebell training. Now, he's at the extreme end of kettlebell training, so he loves it. That's his thing. He trains people. He coaches people. That's his thing. That's cool. I like kettlebells, but at the same time, I also like barbells. I also like dumbbells. I also like body weight. My approach is I will use whatever apparatus needs to be used to get the best result for that client at that point in time based on what they want.
One of my one of my curiosities is, like, people go to me, what do you think of kettlebell training? I go, well, let's just break it right down. What's a kettlebell? It's a fucking heavy thing with a handle on it. Kind of like a dumbbell, a heavy thing with a handle. Kind of like a barbell, a heavy thing with a bigger handle. You know, it's like we didn't invent anything particular. And it's not that they're bad, but it's like, you know, one of the funny things that I meant to chat about, it slipped my mind, but when we were talking before about functional training, and I guess kettlebells, often people put that in the functional training space. And by the way, I'm like you. I train with kettlebells sometimes. I think they have a place and they serve a purpose. But what we really care about is not being, you know, addicted to a single mode or model or piece of equipment, but rather, you know, the overall, you know, recipe, I guess. But I remember, it might have been 12 or 15 years ago when all of my trainers, or a lot of my trainers, and good on them, they went out and did, you know, workshop after workshop on functional training, right? So, and we're buying fucking fit balls and Bosus, and, you know, there's all these bits, wobbly fucking boards all over the joint because, you know, everybody, there's all this, you know, T-Rex, or what are they called?
T-Rex
is the dinosaur, isn't it? It's all good. So I'm not shit canning any of it. But what used to make me laugh was literally, and I can say this because he's a friend of mine, but I won't say his name, but he wouldn't mind me saying this. He was training with one of my guys. Now, he was at this stage 40 kilos overweight, give or take. So he's probably 125 kilos, probably should have weighed, give or take. Not that we're too concerned with weight per se, but maybe 85, right? So lots and lots of weight. So his number one, or his top few goals are literally to lose lots of fats, to change his body composition, to lower his cardiovascular risk, to lower blood pressure, to decrease back pain, and all that will come, you know, as the weight goes off, and to improve his, you know, his VO2 max, his resting heart rate, all of these very healthy, normal things.
Yep.
So one of my trainers does a workshop, and old mate is standing on a fucking wobble board for half the session doing one-arm shoulder presses.
Yep.
You know, with his... And I'm like, all right, I'll let it slide. Then next workout, kind of similar. I'm like, let's put him on the fucking bike, shall we? So he can just pedal off a few of those. You know, and it's not that that's bad. It's just that, like, you go, okay, with the multitude of options that you have available for this man to do in this body, I'm pretty sure that him standing on a wobble board on an uneven, on an unstable surface doing shoulder press with 4 or 5 kilos, unilateral shoulder press, it's not top of the list that he needs to do, you know? And we just get... That's why people do a workshop, then every single client is doing that model of training, irrespective. Yeah. Okay, I just did a workshop on TRX, now everyone's doing TRX. No, that's not personal training. That's impersonal training. That's I just learned a new thing. I'm going to show off. You know, that's not exercise programming. So I think we need to be able to, you know, again, all good things, but they, it's like, I just, we've got a new pharmaceutical company that's working with us. They make this awesome drug. I'm going to give it to fucking everyone.
Regardless of whether they need it or not.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm. All right.
So that gets back to my, term, which I use now as much as I can with people.
Yes.
Relevant versus irrelevant.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Rather than functional. Next question.
One of the things that I remember when, Melissa's beckoning to me. Hey, everyone, guess what? On February 23, you weren't fucking ready for this. You can't fast forward through it. No, don't. February 23, the U Project Conference. Rusty, just hold on to your seat.
You'll be
February
there.
23, I'll be there. That's right, and 8 other speakers, some of our best guests from the U Project, and February 23, Burwood. Deakin University, all the details on the site. We've got, I think, less than 100 seats left now, but they're still selling. Love to see you there. Come along if you can. The U Project Conference coming up in 2 weeks and a little bit. Get your bottom along.
And the site is craigharper.net.
It is indeed craigharper.net, and I'll give you a cuddle. Everyone's like, I'm definitely not coming. Well, if you don't come, I'll come to your house and give you a cuddle. So get the fuck along.
Wow.
What was I going to ask you, Rusty?
Not creepy at all.
No. All right. What was I talking about? Oh.
Workshops.
I don't know. Let's talk about – so a lot of people have shitty posture. What we would call perhaps – so picture this, folks. If you're looking at somebody from the side and their head sits forward and their shoulders roll forward and their back looks a bit hunchy, that's what we would call kyphosis, or a kyphotic posture, which is that kind of hunchy, humpy middle of the thoracic area. And that's a lot of people now, including, I hate to say, me at times, because I'm captain sitting in a chair lately.
Yeah.
So I've got a few thoughts and ideas, but you, okay, so nobody wants that posture apart from the fact that it looks shit. It is shit from a functional point of view, and it can give us a lot of pain between our shoulder blades and neck and traps. What can we do that's not over the top to improve our posture?
Yeah, okay. So this is like a whole area of exercise science within itself. So the brief way I approach it is we need to get people to understand what good posture is. I use a little analogy of saying to people, imagine there's a string attached to the top of your head, and as you sit or as you stand, someone is treating you like a puppet and they're lifting that string up. So you want to feel like you're being lifted up by a piece of string that's attached to the top of your head. Now, if you sit in your chair, and I can't see you or Melissa at the moment, but I bet if both of you kind of imagine that same thing, you will automatically sit up straighter, because I'm standing at the moment, and I know that if I just think about that string and just try and elevate my head upwards, everything falls into place a little bit better. It might not be perfect, but it's closer to perfect than what it was. So standing tall, sitting tall, keeping that chin pulled back towards your chest rather than letting it jut forward is the start of having a good posture. Now, postural analysis and fixing posture is a very complicated process, but I think for most people, just being aware of how to sit better and stand better is a good starting point.
I agree. I think a lot of fixing your posture, in inverted commas, is really about awareness. Because
awareness.
I often, if I've got a room full of people and I talk about posture, 300 people sit up straight away because everyone's slumping, right? A couple of really practical things for those of you who go to the gym. So just imagine from kind of your armpit, where your armpit is, where your arm meets your ribs up there, and kind of a line down to, say, the bottom of your sternum. Quite often those muscles are very, very tight, right? Mm-hmm. Especially when you're kyphotic and your shoulders sit forward, they're very tight. And then the muscles behind, which should kind of pull your shoulders back, quite often they are weak. So a couple of really easy things, like I do this stretch, and again, this is not a prescription, this is just something I do, you might want to try it. And for me, because I've got a fair bit of muscle and I'm, you know, nearly 40 years old now and I've got the flexibility of a fucking cricket bat, when I do this stretch, this probably won't do anything for the girls, but for the boys, I stand against a wall, I put my heels against the wall, my ass on the wall, my shoulders on the wall, my head against the wall, obviously I'm back to the wall, and then I lift my arms out in a crucifix and then take them up to about the kind of 10 to 2 position with my knuckles on the wall. And for me, that's like a major stretch where I'm stretching through my ribs, I'm stretching through my pecs, and I'm getting into a position where kind of where I want my thoracic spine to be. So when we get, in other words, when we get stronger around the kind of between the shoulder blades, around the shoulder blades area, and you can do that with like things like seated row, supported row, one arm row, bent over row, some different cable work, and we get more flexible through the chest so it's not so tight and pulling our shoulders forward. And we do things like just even on a football, we have a football at uni and sometimes we have a bunch of them. I often go sit on it and then lie on it and just get into thoracic extension, Rusty, where I'm just laying backwards over this convex object that is stretching my back. So
there's great movement for the upper back and for general posture of the spine. It's a beauty.
100%. And there are lots of things we can do. That's not a prescription, but, you know, give it a go. All right,
I think the other thing I'd add is that people need to be aware of their posture, because posture can affect your mood and posture can affect your breathing, your ability to breathe well. Like, there's so many implications. So
100%.
Definitely we all need to be aware of our posture.
All right, kids and weights, yes or no, how, why, when, and go.
Yep.
No pressure. Yep.
No, look, it's definitely it's been a contentious area over the years, but general public knowledge about the application of strength training around kids is getting better. Because once upon a time, if you said you wanted to do some strength training with your child, people would freak out. Now they don't so much freak out. They're just curious about, well, what does that look like? How much? What? When? Why? So I don't really have any problems with parents or guardians anymore being concerned about their kids doing strength training. And I refer to it as strength training rather than weight training, because it doesn't elicit the same response.
And I think also the key variable that matters most is the intensity. You know, we don't want kids lifting heavy weights. And in terms of what's the age where they can start lift, there is no age, because kids mature at different rates and so on. But this is a conversation that I've had with my training partner, the Crab, who fortunately is alive, is that his daughter, Jamie, who's 14, she is...
She's strong.
Well, she's this Sunday night, she told me, because she's, you know, she's following a set program. She goes, guess what I'm doing on Sunday? I go, what? She goes, I'm deadlifting 110 for 3. Wow. Right? This is in her program. Now, she's a 14-year-old girl. She's got no injuries. She's growing like, you know, people go, oh, it affects their growth. It ain't affecting her growth. She's tall and getting taller. Now, she's been lifting weights in a really systematic way for 2 years. So this is a 2-year process. One, by the way, I wouldn't recommend any 14-year-old do this in general terms. But let me also say, she has been doing gymnastics at a high level since she was 5.
So which is one of the best forms of strength training yes. that any child can do.
So this girl comes in, she's an athlete. She's not a kid who does a few things. And I mean, when she was, and again, I'm not endorsing or criticizing this, but the fact is when she was 12, she was doing 30 hours of training a week. So for her to go into the gym and lift a few weights, it's considerably less harmful and less taxing and less potentially causing an injury than 30 hours of gym. And by the way, she's still healthy and in good shape. So, you know, lifting weights is really about – you think about people freak out with kids doing 5-kilo dumbbell curls. Well, if your kid's climbing a tree and your kid weighs 45 kilos, your kid's lifting 45 kilos.
Yep.
If they're on the monkey bars and they're taking themselves across the monkey bars with their feet off the ground, whatever they weigh, that's the stress that's on their joints. So we're talking about lighter weights done in an intelligent, strategic way. By the way, do they need to be in the gym? No. But should they definitely be out of it? No. So again, turn down the hysteria, settle the fuck down, and if your kids want to get in the gym and do a bit of something with you, the world's probably not going to end.
No, absolutely.
All right.
Get them going.
Now I know you've got, we're 5:42. Let's do maybe 5 more minutes. So in sport, we talk about periodization and we talk about, you know, training loads and we talk about, for example, like with AFL, we go, all right, we'll give or take, they're playing for depending on how they go, but let's say 25 weeks, 22 weeks, whatever. And so they're training or recovering the rest of the year. And when we periodize, I'm not teaching you anything here. I'm just explaining something to the group who may already know. But we vary the workload, the intensity, the volume, the sets, the reps, the recovery, so that we get people, athletes peaking in inverted commas at the right time. Do we, general public, do we need to periodize our training? Do we need to go, I'm going to do the next 2 weeks, you know, like lighter, more reps, more recovery. I'm just going to give myself kind of a recovery week or two. Or is that, what are your thoughts around any of that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you use the term periodization, generally we think about that in my field anyway. We think about periodization as something like a really detailed and specific plan, like you say, to get someone ready for a specific event at a specific time. Now, if your goal is quite general and you're coming off a low level of training or a low base of fitness and strength, do you need to periodize to that extent? No, you don't. But do you need to have a plan? Yes, you do. And do you need to vary your training and the stimulus that you subject yourself to from time to time? Yes, you do. So what I'm saying is, I think anyone who's got a goal of getting fitter, leaner, lighter, stronger, whatever that is, it is important that they have some basic plan, some basic outline as to what they're going to do, how often they're going to do it, how hard they're going to go, how they're going to get some rest, what's their nutrition look like, and let's move forward from there. Because otherwise, it's just an exercise in random kind of chaos, which will produce random results. So I say to people, if you owned a business and you wanted the business to succeed, you'd have a business plan. And they go, yep, absolutely. Well, it's the same for the body. If you've got a physical goal that you want to achieve, you need a physical plan. You need a plan to produce that outcome. And it doesn't have to be extremely detailed, but you've got to have something that keeps you, you know, structured, consistent, and accountable to what your goal is.
Jeez, you sound like me sometimes. And I think also on top of that, you know, I've flogged this idea to people, so I apologize for those who are sick of me talking about it, but a few of you will hear this for the first time, and that is that your body is a biofeedback system. It's always telling you something. And so, you know, we go and we see someone like Rusty and we get a program designed or whatever we do, and then it's our job as the doers of the program or the athletes or the gym members to then do whatever and record everything, but also see what your body's telling you, what's in terms of recovery or energy or tiredness or pain or performance. I feel like we don't trust ourselves enough, Russ, that we need to, you know, sometimes learn how our body works.
Yeah, well, you know, I think also too, people who haven't done a lot of exercise or who haven't been naturally haven't naturally gravitated towards exercise, they probably don't have that innate understanding of what feels like what, whereas you and I, we know our body so well because we've trained for so long, and you learn to understand how to read your body. And that is a skill. I mean, new people take up exercise programs in my gym, and you know, they're almost horrified by the level of soreness that they get sometimes. I'm like, yep, well, that's normal because your body's in a bit of shock. In 2 weeks' time, you won't be getting that. And then they come to me in 2 weeks' time and they go, well, that really acute soreness is gone, but now I feel really tired. I'm like, yeah, well, you're adjusting to the new exercise, the new stress. You've changed your food. Your body's in a bit of shock still. Your system's trying to adjust. Give it time. In another couple of weeks, you won't have that. And they come back and they go, you're right. Like I've got energy again. So
yeah,
it's a learnt skill. You know, understanding how your body works and responds is a bit of a learnt skill, I think.
And also, as you said, there's a massive period of adaptation adjustment where this is all new. And the thing is too, quite often when we go from kind of lounge lizard to now I'm or couch potato to now I'm doing, you know, we're changing our thinking and our habits and our food and our exercise and our lifestyle. It's not a small thing, and you're not going to totally adjust in 3 minutes. All right, now I know we're winding up, so let's be quick. Now, I remember 100 years ago, back in, I think it was maybe the best part of 20 years ago, where the Sydney Swans came out and said, we're not stretching our athletes anymore. It inhibits performance. And so there was, you know, in the old days, obviously the team would warm up, then they'd stretch, then they'd warm up a bit more and stretch a bit more, then go and play. And but there was quite a bit of debate. I don't know where it is now. I haven't even looked for a while. You're more all over it than me. But do you know, in terms of, I'm not talking about the value of stretching per se, I'm not talking about yoga classes or, but just in general, of sporting performance, what's the thinking now around warm-ups in general and stretching pre-competition?
So nowadays the general trend or the general thinking, the scientific approach is warm-ups are much more effective if they involve some kind of movement-based activity rather than sitting and holding a static position for a set period of time. Whilst that has value at other points of your training and so forth, warm-ups now are a lot more around
dynamic. Dynamic warm-up.
Yeah, sure. And different routines, different movement patterns. So, you know, squatting, rotation. So push, pull, squat, rotate, bend, extend, all the basic movements. So, you know, if I'm doing a warm-up for a cricket team, knowing that they're going to bowl and field, obviously some of my warm-up has to involve some dynamic rotational type stuff because they're about to go and do that. And the static stretching, the sort of the position that we hold and relax into is now much more commonly used at the back end of training or as a recovery method within itself.
All right, two more things quickly. So I'll cover this one off and then you add whatever you want. So one of the questions I've been asked a lot over the years, or perhaps people have even kind of asserted that pin-loaded training is ridiculous because you need to use free weights, blah, blah, blah. So I just want to talk to that a little bit. So people have asked me whether or not using pin-loaded machines, you know, so pin-loaded bench press, pin-loaded lat pull, pin, whatever, is okay and does it serve a purpose? Well, the answer is there's a few reasons why it's good in some situations. So, for example, I remember when my mum started training with weights. She was about 60, never been near a gym, never picked up a dumbbell, had no idea. She lacked confidence. She lacked skill. It was in a new environment, blah, blah, blah. So I wrote her first program and it was essentially 10 exercises on 10 pin-loaded machines. Well, by the time she finished the first workout, she had some confidence. By the time she'd been in the gym three or four times, she knew how to do everything. They required very little skill. her confidence was up, her enjoyment was up, and she was actually working against resistance and her body was starting to adapt quickly, right? So for me, I think pin-loaded plays a role when quite often with beginners, when we're trying to build confidence and body awareness and we're just trying to get the wheels turning. And obviously there are some pin-loaded machines like cables, which are a lot more variable. But I think too, with people who have, like Johnny that I train that got blown up, literally, I use a lot of pin-loaded stuff for him because of his lack of stability. So it allows him to do things that he wouldn't be able to work, muscle groups that would be difficult for him to work without that kind of balance aspect taken out of it. And also I think for a lot of people who are time poor and who they're not worried too much about sporting performance, they just want their arms, their back, their chest, shoulders, legs and abs and bum to be a bit stronger. And that's okay too. And I guess the last thing is that pin-loaded stuff is just really convenient. So for people who have literally got 20 minutes, which is a lot of people, I've got 20 minutes, I've got to go in and I want to do 5 or 6 exercises. Well, if you're in the gym setting up barbells and dumbbells and benches and adjustable shit, you're not getting that done. So I think that's probably the value in pin-loaded. And you?
Summarized perfectly, mate. It comes back to what we said before, and that is the value is in knowing what tool to use at what point for what person for what purpose.
All right, last one, 2 or 3 minutes, and this is really a whole podcast, this episode, and I just want to cover it quickly because I put it on the list. So getting big, getting big, I know that's not necessarily your forte, but you've trained lots of people yourself who wanted to get big. And also, you know, you've also put on a fair bit of muscle over the years. And even though you are an ectomorph and a hard gainer, you've still got way more muscle than you once had. So for me, it's all about the quality of the training, the intensity of the training with good form, recovery and food. And a lot of people think that if 3 workouts are good, then 6 workouts are twice as good. So especially young guys, and not just guys, but girls too, but guys seem to be more obsessed with getting big, obviously. But so it's always going to be about quality of training, intensity of training, nutrition and recovery. And nutrition and recovery are possibly more important than the actual training at times when we're talking merely about hypertrophy.
Yeah, look, hypertrophy training is, as you and I both know, it's a very specific form of strength training, and the degree of success that you do or do not have is going to be somewhat dependent upon what genetics your parents passed on to you. Having said that, my approach to hypertrophy has always been and will always be: train regularly, train with intensity, stick to the big compound movements as the basis of your training. I see way too many young males in the gym doing endless amounts of bicep curls, tricep pushdowns, and lateral raises when they should be leg pressing, squatting, deadlifting, chin-ups, bench, and the like. Because, you know, those movements are uncomfortable. They are physically demanding, and you gotta learn the discipline of being uncomfortable for a whole session to get that stuff done well. And then, like you say, you can go and do all that stuff and you can train well, but if you don't supplement that training with pretty much perfect nutrition, then the results are going to be compromised. Nutrition is critical. You talk to any successful bodybuilder, male or female, and they will tell you that the amount of success they have in terms of adding lean muscle tissue, managing their body fat composition, decreasing body fat, it all comes down to what they prepare in the kitchen and how strict they are with what they eat. That is sort of so critical.
You are a gun. We appreciate you, mate. I know you've got to go and train a team right now, so I appreciate your time. Again, Melissa, are you writing something for me to look at?
No,
you're just writing, just checking. And just again, what's the name of your gym? Where is it, mate? I know it's a million miles away from most of our listeners, but per chance somebody's in the area.
Yeah, so we're regional Victoria. The Goulburn Valley is the region. We're nestled between Echuca and Shepparton in a little town of 7,000 called Kyabram, and we are called Infinity Health Club. You can have a look on our website, Infinity Health Club. It shows everything we do there. And if you're ever in the region, pop in. Love to help out a You Project listener and give them a free workout.
Oh, giddy up. You might even give them a shoulder rub. You stay on the line, mate. I'm going to say goodbye to everybody. So thanks, Rusty. Appreciate it. Anything else, Melissa?
That's all.
Thanks everyone. Love your guts. And we will be back Sunday night.
We will.
See ya.
See ya.